podcast fra E24.
God sommer, kjære lytter. Nå det ferie, skuldrene senket. Dette et høydepunkt fra sesongen. Så lena tilbake, nyt sommeren, og kanskje hører du noe du ikke fikk med deg første gangen. Polen vepner seg til tennene, og landet nærmest NATOs nye forsvarsmål. Nå kommer 1000 tanks, men holder det om russerne prøver seg? Og ikke droner avgjørende i fremtidens kriger likevel? To av Europas ledende forsvarsredaktører gjester E24-podden. Velkommen til E24-podden, denne gang fra Warszawa i Polen. Landet står i en voldsom opprustning, og derfor det svært interessant å få et blikk fra en av Europas største forsvarsaviser, som holder til nettopp i Warszawa, og blikket deres på Produsent i Oslo Erik Holm Nyvold. Samtalen foregår naturlig nok på engelsk. So, welcome to a new episode of E24 Podden, and I have two guests with me today, and they are...
Hello, my name is Antoni Walkowski, I'm an editor with Defense24.pl.
Hi, I'm Maciej Szopa, senior editor of Defense24.pl.
Thank you so much, guys, for joining me on this podcast on a crucial subject, defense and security in Europe. And we are in quite dire straits these days. We have an ongoing war in the Middle East, as everybody knows, and we have the full-scale invasion of Ukraine started in 2022, but it's still ongoing. And then we have Poland. A rising power in Europe, high level of economic growth, but also a high level of defense expenditure. It's actually NATO leading, isn't it?
It is. Right now, the government is spending over 4% of GDP on defense. However, there's a caveat, and that's the fact that even though Poland's economic might is rising, we are still having to contend with the fact that the Polish economy is not the size of its Western counterparts. So, for example, Germany, I believe, has an economy four times the size of Poland's. So 1% of defense expenditure in Germany is very different to 1% of defense expenditure in Poland.
Yes, Poland is investing right now a lot in defense. There are a couple of reasons. First, of course, is the international situation. Second is the neglect that we had in investing in defense for many years since the fall of communism. We are making larger investments since like 5 or 6 years. Now, and well, also we want to benefit from this, like in the similar way like Korea or Israel did, to have innovative economy. This could be a way to benefit from all of this.
Yeah. And yeah. To follow up on what Maciej has just said, the Ministry of Defense and the government in general are looking towards defense spending as being a driver of growth and high-value jobs, as well as, you know, being the natural natural way of reinforcing the Polish military forces. So yeah. We are importing a lot of equipment, that is true, but we are also investing in our own capabilities. And only over the last few days, we've heard that we've heard the news of several hundred million zloty being invested in a TNT plant in central Poland. Also, major funds being directed to a truck manufacturer and other expenditures being capital expenditures being made to ensure that the Polish defense industrial base remains modern and relevant.
And it's really interesting your point there, because I think some listeners would also think that expenditure on military is less money to hospitals or the police. But it can actually be a boon to the economy, can't it? It can ramp up R&D, for example, and make the Polish economy more resilient and broad-based as well.
Absolutely, especially given that the employment in the industrial sector, in heavy industry in particular, has been growing over the past few years in Poland. And that is one of the key differences between the Polish economy and other economies in the West, so say Germany and Spain. So generally speaking, the number of employees, proportionally speaking, working in heavy industry in Poland is on the level of China right now. So that is far beyond Germany and France as well. That's one thing. The second thing is, I once remember the CEO of a large Polish defense contractor saying that 30% of all the defense expenses made in this country go straight back to taxes. And that's before you take into account the money that is being paid for high-paying jobs, for maintaining excellency and competency in the industry in particularly valuable sectors, so, say, electronics. And then there's the question of this money actually being spent to enhance Poland's position in the region and to create the impression of a stable, secure country which is treating its responsibilities as a NATO member responsibly, and also trying to portray itself as a safe haven and not just a beneficiary, but also a major contributor to NATO's defense.
And obviously, all NATO members are now ramping up defense expenditure. We are going that way. We live in an unsafe world. But that Poland started earlier to ramp up, it should give you a head start, probably, because to invest in defense is a little bit like investing in energy. It takes years before you really see the results.
Well, yes, of course, we have a lot of problems linked to all these undertakings. We don't have like ideal health services or, I don't know, economy. however, on the long term, it should be beneficial.
When we compare to the Russian military, the open aggressor in Europe, we could also talk obviously about China as a strategic rival and maybe an even bigger threat to the NATO alliance in the long run, because just the economy and the military of China is so much vastly bigger. But right now, with Russia there and so close to your borders, How much resilience does Poland already have with those defense expenditures when we compare it to Russia?
I think it's fair to say that we're only going to be as strong as our collective resilience is as NATO. Because let's face it, not many countries are treating their defense as seriously as, say, Finland is. I mean, I think one would be tempted to say that it wasn't Finland that joined NATO, it was NATO that joined Finland. And as far as defense preparedness, they are my absolute number one and absolute benchmark. And also, an excellent example of a country which can maintain a very high degree of trust in its public institutions, a true welfare state that is for the benefit of its citizens, but at the same time is treating its obligations very seriously. So to go back to the original argument, given the sheer disproportion of forces and the fact that Russia is not just able but also willing to use its power very decisively, I think that creating a sanitary cordon along Russia's western border with like-minded nations is the way to go forward. I mean, you don't have to convince people in the Baltic states that Russia is a threat. Same goes for Finland and Sweden and Denmark and Norway and all the other countries. So maintaining cohesion within that bloc is key to our security, not just the North Sea, but also the Baltic, and just generally stabilizing the region. So from that perspective, maintaining unity is going to be absolutely key. As far as the level of our defense expenditure, you know, us being defense reporters, we always like to see more money being put towards defense. But, you know, as Maciej was saying, it will also be lovely to be able to afford better healthcare and more expenditure for education and other basic functions of the state. However, there's this old Polish saying, which basically goes like this: if you can't afford to maintain your own army, you're going to pay for someone else's. Yeah. So in that respect, I think that's a trade-off that we're going to have to make for the time being, although I would love it to be different.
We made accounting in Poland, how many percent of GDP you have to pay for occupying army. It's about 25%. So we prefer to spend 4 or 5, not 25.
That's a very good point. We can see that the Polish population as well, they feel the threat from Russia. They are very supportive of the defense expenditure now, aren't they?
Absolutely. The military is currently the most trusted public institution in Poland. They've just recently overtaken the fire brigades in that regard. So that's quite an achievement. So in that respect, I think that the levels of defense expenditure are not a political question, but rather they are a question of statecraft. Who do we partner with? Where do we direct our resources? I mean, do we take loans from the European Union to fund our finances right here, right now? Or do we put off expenditure for a later date to maintain a more balanced budget? Those are the questions that are currently, you know, people are asking themselves, you know, at family tables in regular discussions. And we are talking about issues that are now front page news. And, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, even after the Russian invasion of Crimea, it would have been difficult to envision, you know, the front page of a major newspaper portraying military action of any description. Right now, it's the norm. We see this every single day, and we see people discussing this at family dinner tables. And this is a major issue, I think.
Yeah. And we have seen a lot of Russian sabotage and suspected Russian sabotage for several years. You in Poland have had fresh encounters also from Russian drones. Was that a big reminder both to politicians and the population as well that the threat is real as never before?
Yes, the most, I think, eye-opening event was this drone incursion in September 25. For sure, it was also eye-opening for our Air Force commanders, which I was speaking with. However, we in Poland are quite used to Russian threats, even before the Donbas war, before 2014. Every time we purchase like one helicopter or a couple of tanks or something small, because we used to make small purchases, every time Russians were trying to scare us with bringing some more Iskander missiles to Kaliningrad, or talking about redirecting nuclear missiles toward Poland and so on. So even in these peaceful times, let's call them peaceful, these guys were strongly threatening Poland. What's happening right now, it's only one step up.
And also the September incursion that Maciej has just mentioned is a good reminder that acting in solidarity with your allies is crucial to maintain stability in the region. So in that specific action, Dutch F-35s participated alongside Polish F-16s.
Yes,
and also they were supported by a Polish early warning aircraft as well as an Italian contingent with an early warning aircraft. So this was very much an international operation, an example of actual NATO coordination in practice, in an actual combat situation. Because I don't know if you know this, but this was, I believe this was the first time that a foreign aircraft was shot down over the skies of Poland since 1945. So it's a major event. Yeah. So in that respect, one has to wonder if this attitude can be, you know, kept up for the long term. And from our perspective, it should be. But, I mean, those threats by Russia keep us on our toes in a way. They are beneficial to a certain extent because they keep reminding us that the Russians are always going to be the Russians. And, you know, in the immortal words of Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly, carry a big stick, when you're talking to the Russians in particular.
Exactly. And I mean, the Ukrainian war started in 2014, and then we had the full-scale invasion in 2022. It's been going on for a long time, but there could be a time where there are some sort of actual peace there. But that won't settle the nerves, won't it? I mean, then the Russians would probably have more capabilities quite fast to do other things.
Well, for sure, Russians are gathering experience. They are developing especially new types of weapons. I'm talking about drones and anti-drones weapons in particular. What we are trying to do in Poland is to have a higher technology level of our forces than Russians have. However, right now we can probably say we have higher level in these conservative types of weapons, like Air Force. We have F-35s, for example.
Artillery.
Tanks, artillery, very, very good artillery.
And you have a massive, or you're getting a massive tank fleet, right?
Oh, yes. This will be probably at least 1,000 tanks. And I'm talking about the third generation tanks. Abrams, K2s, probably in some foreseeable future we will sell Leopards and take even more Abrams or K2s. We have our own armored fighting vehicle called Borsuk, which is considered one of the most modern or maybe even most modern in the world right now. The production is already ongoing. 15 units were produced. So that's what we're trying to do. My personal hope is that Russian fixation over drones and anti-drone warfare it will be the end, because there could be some inventions that will prevent drones from being so effective in the near future. Yeah. I think this is quite possible.
That's very interesting. And it's news to me. You are an aviation expert. And, you know, what people normally say these days is that drones are the future. And do we even need jets? Because modern drone warfare has totally changed the war landscape. But you're saying there could be a limit here as well.
Yes, especially that let's look what's happening near the Gulf. Iranians are using drones against most wealthy countries in the world. They want to pay Ukrainians and others for technologies, to develop technologies to fight drones, especially one-way attack drones, heavy long-range drones. So maybe there will be some microwave weapon, maybe some electromagnetic impulse weapon, or maybe development in lasers. Who knows? Maybe something else. Maybe there will be a multi-effector system, something like Poland purchased right now is trying to develop in a SAN program. So I think this is a real hope.
And when the geopolitics is so tense and we have several ongoing wars, innovation also happens so fast that it's hard to predict which weapon systems will prevail, probably.
Absolutely. Though this does not invalidate the conventional forces that we know and recognize as being the traditional markers of military power. So, for example, if you look at the composition of the Polish armored force and the new tanks we've just mentioned and the new howitzers and the rocket launchers, they've not been invalidated by drones. Rather, drones are reshaping the way that wars are being fought and are basically forcing militaries in an adaptation of tactics. So, you know, I like to liken this to the introduction of the machine gun. And back in 1904 and 1905, we saw the first massed use of machine guns in the Russo-Japanese War. That influenced tactics during the First World War tremendously. However, many countries failed to adapt to that innovation, as a result of which you've had hundreds of thousands of people mown down by artillery and machine gun fire because they were not able to introduce and, you know, make those conclusions quickly enough. So, yeah, what you've just mentioned, that is the need to adapt really quickly, that is absolutely 100% the case. However, what we also need to stress is that right now, as we speak, the Ukrainians are conducting limited offensives using mechanized forces because they were capable of actually neutralizing Russian drone use in the south of the country, which shows us that in a certain scenario, the conventional forces need to be employed and have to be employed in order to be able to protect the occupants effectively and provide timely and accurate fire support. And you cannot possibly rely on drones because you can't take a trench with a drone. You can't destroy a bunker with a drone. You can't, you know, achieve strategic objectives. Drones are a tool, but they are quite limited in their ability. They're a very effective tool and very cost effective in particular. But they are not the end-all be-all. The Ukrainians are still craving actual ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, tanks, armored personnel carriers, infantry fighting vehicles, self-propelled howitzers, and all sorts of other typical military equipment that we know and like and recognize, in addition to the drones that they are making. If those things were irrelevant, they wouldn't have been making those appeals to the West to provide more and more of that equipment, would they? But I'd like to change the subject a little bit right now and perhaps switch roles with you. I mean, from your perspective as someone who does economy and looks at business and the developments of the economic indicators of Russia, do you think that Russia's current level of expenditure and investment into defense, or rather into aggression, is it sustainable from your perspective as an economist or someone who is interested in such things?
Yeah, no, I think it's a very good question. And right now it's sustainable because the Middle East war has risen the prices of gas and oil so much that it really gives Vladimir Putin some relief, unfortunately. But in the long run, obviously, I think we see some parallels already with the Soviet Union that also in the 80s started to ramp up defense expenditures to a level the economy in the long run could not sustain. If you spend 20% on defense, they're not doing it right now, but in the later stages of the Soviet Union, they spent way too much on defense. So the civil society more or less broke down faster because of it. So, but at the same time, there were a lot of speculation, even shortly after 2022, that the Russian economy would break down fast by sanctions, by everything. And it turns out it's very hard to make precise prognosis on this. So how long the Russian war economy can sustain itself, I think, is very much hard to say. But when you know that there's a lack of bus drivers in Russia, there's a lack of manpower in several sectors, it tells you something about a society going in the wrong direction. And it tells you something about how inflation can spike quite fast and much faster than what we now see.
Absolutely. And especially if you look at the industrial indicators, I believe that it was in the beginning of this year when they announced that diesel engine production dropped by 40% for a country at war. You know, basic industrial items which are needed to keep the industrial machinery of a state going, train cars, tractors, tractor trailers, trucks, all of those indicators are going down. So what I think, to follow up on what you've just said, we are seeing the defense sector, or rather the aggression sector, sucking up the entire workforce and the expenditure of the state. And, you know, just illustrating what you've just said about the latter days of the Soviet Union. And I find it interesting that you actually use this analogy because, you know, we as former members of the Eastern Bloc, which only disintegrated because the Soviet Union collapsed completely, we are really looking forward to this happening again.
Yeah. Must the day come. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I have a final topic to address to you, and that's the Norwegian-Polish cooperation. Norway is also ramping up defense expenditure, obviously, now. We have some big defense companies, well-known also around Europe, Kongsberg Gruppen foremost. How can Norway and Poland cooperate better now, defense-wise?
Well, for sure, Norway has a lot of products which are interesting for Poland, and many of them are already purchased. I'm talking about naval strike missiles from Kongsberg. This is one of their examples. Kongsberg is also present in a Polish anti-drone brand new program in Poland. Norway is like a high-tech country. Poland, on the other hand, also have its own interesting products, like, for example, Piorun mine pads, which Norway also already purchased. I think the ground for cooperation is also Korean technology, for example, tanks, artillery, rocket artillery. We could cooperate here, for example, buy together, or maybe you could buy something produced in Poland, which is Korean, like K2 tanks in the future, maybe. So there are many, many things like that.
Yeah, and maybe Norway and Poland should consider having a more explicit defense agreement together as well quite soon.
I absolutely think so. I mean, something that would mirror the recent agreement signed between Sweden and Poland, that would be most welcome news to anyone watching the defense sector. I mean, Norway right now is a literal gatekeeper of the Baltic Sea. Not just the North Sea from your perspective, but also the Baltic Sea together with Denmark. So with that in mind, it is absolutely imperative for us to maintain a good, steady relationship with Norway. And in addition to the NSM missiles that we've been purchasing over the past few years, there are a few interesting projects going on in Norway that could be of interest to Poland. I mean, right now we are procuring submarines from Sweden. However, Norway and Germany in tandem are developing the Terfing missile, which is a major capability and could be a major capability boost for Poland's submarines once they arrive. And there are other examples going the other way. I mean, Norway, you know, as Maciej has just mentioned, recently decided on the purchase of the South Korean K-239 system, the rocket artillery system to replace its M-270s. Now, this system is being manufactured here in Poland and integrated with a Polish chassis and a fire control system and so on. But we're also, most importantly, building an ammunition factory. And now there are Norwegian companies which have expertise in this area. So, for example, Nammo, being a major manufacturer of rocket engines, could be a beneficiary of this process and also a net contributor to this process to ensure that this factory goes up and running should, for example, should there be a limitation on the production capacity of rocket engines in Poland. So there are plenty of things that we could be doing, especially in the area of reconnaissance, joint fires, and also joint purchases of equipment. But there's also plenty of things that Poland could learn from Norway. So the Nordic traditions of civil defense, that's a major factor, not just in terms of, you know, the hard defense that we understand as military procurement and so on, but the resilience of the society, its resilience against Russian disinformation and so on. We could also learn a few things from the general Norwegian public, like trust towards the democratic institutions. But that's a longer-term project, and I think that's beyond the scope of this interview.
Yes, yes. But I have it to say, Norwegians have a lot to learn from you guys as well, and resilience, and to be steady, and ramp up over time. We have to learn better from our perspective as well. Thank you so much for taking time. I'm sure you will have very busy days going forward with all going on in the world. We are sitting here in the locals of a leading defense newspaper in the whole of Europe. So thank you so much again. I'm looking forward to publish this for the listeners.
Much appreciated, and thank you for having us. Happy to have you back anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.